This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We played the... Drew asked Zach Kleiman if he still believes in the big three. And then we played the complete answer. Was about 6 minutes.
A couple answers like that. And one of them was not from Drew's question. It was some other question. And it was, I was the one holding the microphone waiting. And he talked for like 7 minutes straight and just kept going. I was just like, come on, man. That's why I asked two questions.
Because
I knew the mic wasn't going to come back to me again.
What did you just make of the way that he answered these questions?
Yeah, I apologize for my voice and the occasional coughing that might ensue. I thought what was most notable was how noncommittal he was about keeping the core of the team together. And that's why I wrote what I wrote. I think there were multiple signals. You listen for repeated languages from when it comes to the players are different, but when it comes to the GM and the coach in these situations, especially with the Grizzlies, because they are prepared about the messages they do and don't want to get out. I listen for repeated language. I listen for what things does Kleiman repeat himself and what are commonalities between what Kleiman says and what the coach says, right? And so on the Kleiman front, there was a lot of like repetition of we're not good enough, we weren't close, we have to be open-minded about what we do, tough conversations. You start putting all that together, and I'm not saying they're going to break up this core, but I'm saying – it's very possible that they break up this core. It's clear to me that is not off the table whatsoever.
You then went through it, and I'd urge people to read your column because it's very thoughtful, as it always is. But the challenge with that is you'll hear a lot of people say, break it up, blow it up, run it back, whatever else.
Easy to talk about.
And as you go through the players one by one,
yep,
it's hard to believe that you could get better by trading any of them.
It is my belief. And this is where I land in what I wrote. It is my belief, and I could be. My mind could change if you present me a deal that I don't personally envision, right? But I've done the exercise on all three of them. I've like gone through like the whole league and like what can happen here,
trades.
Right?
Yeah.
It is my belief that it's not like this is not something that lands you as an obvious championship contender. I don't think that path exists.
Right.
I just hate to break it to people, but I don't. To me. Logic to me suggests that the best thing for all parties involved, meaning the Grizzlies and the players, is to all be committed to each other and to keep the three together, try to improve the supporting cast through a combination, and I think it will require both, a combination of internal improvement, which is there to be had, and some changes, and then hope your coaching change has an effect like it did with Cleveland, which I've been talking about since the beginning of the season. Is to have all that come together and to be a team that looks up and you're winning 55 games next year and you think you got a shot, which I think is it's very, very possible that would happen. That is what I think should happen, but I don't know if that will happen because I don't know if that's what all the parties want. There are other external pressures. I don't know.
I think those are the two things that are interesting about this is that one could be, I think you're right. Like if you were just moving into another city without this history or else, and you just had this team with a better Zach Edey and a better Jalen
Wells. This is all the stuff you have to work with. What do you want to do with it? I think that's what you do with it.
You'd feel great about it, and you'd feel just keep it together and at the margins try to get a backup point guard and whatever else.
Right.
So, but there are two things that could be working against it. One is, as you point out, we don't know that all three players want to be here. Right. That's part of it. And then the second is there some external branding pressure to do something different?
Right. That's right. I think good things have a way of souring over time when they don't become great things. And that's sort of part of it. Like internally with fans, whatever, you can be good for a while. And if you're just good and you're not, it sort of loses its oomph a little bit. So I think there is that, concern about sort of staleness setting in. I think, if we say the Taylor Jenkins voice, wear out after 6 years, does a relationship, do you risk do you need to shake things up? Because sometimes you just need to shake things up. I think that's possibly true. And then, again, you wonder about, you know, Jaron's got the contract thing. There's been all kinds of stuff. If you listen to national podcasts, people, I get annoyed because the default tone of national NBA podcasts, and they're not all guilty of this, but the default tone, and the TV stuff is worse, but I listen to mostly the pods. The default tone is either like knowingly snarky or snarkily knowing, however you want to phrase right. it, right? And I get kind of annoyed, but there's a lot of that. Well, just wait till this summer. It could be a big summer for the Grizzlies. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, right. And people sort of half know things or think they know things or whatever. And so I just think there's a lot of stuff there to be sorted out. And as Zach Kleiman said, you know, we're going to digest it and we're going to take some time. And, you know, he didn't make a lot of promises. Now, I thought he was stronger on – he was complimentary of all three of the core players.
Right.
But he stopped short of saying, we believe we can win big with this trio and we are keeping them together. He did not say that.
No, he did not say that.
Notably, I thought he was strongest on Morant, where he said, you know, we believe Ja can be the leader of this team going forward, right? And then when Drew asked him, you know, he didn't restate, I won't trade Ja, but Drew basically asked him, is what you said earlier this season still hold? And he said, yes, right? And he said, I mean, he did at one point when prompted say, you know, Jaron's a priority or whatever, but there was not a full throated, like we're keeping this together. It was interesting. You could sort of break down the roster into three components based on the way he talked about it, which is the score three or the three best players, but there's other stuff involved and you're not 100% sure keeping it together. There's these young players who are in good contracts who he's really into. Edie, he specifically mentioned Edie, Pippen, Wells and Cam Spencer.
Yeah.
He did not mention in that context Vince Williams or Gigi Jackson and he mentioned Santi Aldama at all. And that was on my list of things to ask him and time ran out.
Right.
But he did not mention Santi Aldama at all. So then you have these other players who like just sort of are notable by their omission from when he's going on these 6-minute tangents talking about the team.
Right.
It doesn't occur to him to talk about Santi Aldama and Luke Kennard and Brandon Clark and Gigi Jackson and some of these other guys, right? And you can read into that.
Yeah, he talked about Gigi and Vince talking about the trade deadline.
Right.
You asked him about what mistake had he made over the last year, and he settled on Jake LaRavia, which is really twofold, not extending him. And then he said...
Well, he said the mistake was... But I guess it is twofold, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and then he said separately, for the future, it made sense to trade him at the trade deadline, but boy, we could have used him.
Yeah.
Sort of what he said there. So in terms of the... I mean, of course, the other reason that the big three, the other reason to quote unquote, is that they're going to be increasingly expensive for a level of achievement,
right?
So, you know.
So to me, part of the Jaron thing is you got to stipulate to me what's the, if your thing is we are keeping Jaron, well, I don't know what the pot of gold is at the end of the rainbow for him, right? And so a $240 million Jaron and a $350 million Jaron, and those are sort of the two poles, right? It's not going to be more than 350 because it can't be. I don't think it's going to be less than 240. And so, like, I have entirely different opinions about the future based upon those two numbers, or maybe it's somewhere in between, right?
You think there is a...
I'm a big Jaron guy, but I'm not a $350 million Jaron guy.
You would sooner move on than pay him $350 million.
I would seriously entertain it. I don't know. To me... That level of contract for a player who is not a clear top five, top six superstar player is a recipe for regret for everybody, for any team and any player, pretty much, right? It's almost always a bad contract.
And you could get value for him because he's an extraordinary player and...
Well, a couple problems there.
What?
One, he's an impending free agent, so there's a level... Right. If you trade him this summer, the team getting him, they can assume they're going to whatever, but there's a level of uncertainty there, and plus they're going to have to pay him too.
Right.
And then because his contract is a huge bargain right now, it's hard to match equally, right? His cap figure next season is $23 million. So if you start thinking about, I'll just make up some joking stuff, right? Like... Tomas Isolo is finished, right? He's even mentioned like the great Finnish player Lauri Markkanen.
Right.
Good young player, same position. Hey, Jaron Lauri Markkanen makes twice as much money next year as Jaron, so you can't trade.
It doesn't work.
Right. You gotta add other stuff, right? You're gonna add other stuff to trade Jaron for a lesser player, right? If you really want to roll the dice, what do you want to do with Jaron for Zion Williamson trade? Well, guess what? Zion Williamson makes like 1.6 times the amount of money that Jaron does, and so that, you know, it's hard to trade him for players of his stature because players of his stature make a lot more money than he does.
You mentioned, and we'll talk about this all week, I'm certain, because but
all month,
all summer.
Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned was, oh, well, maybe they could take Desmond Bain and break that contract up into two.
Like, that's a maybe.
Good luck finding that.
I don't know. It's a maybe. I think the problem with Bain, and I sort of wrote this in the column without getting into like fake trade details, is he's really good. But he's like one of the best versions of one of the least valuable player types in the league, by which I mean scoring guard. If you took the five positions and ranked them in terms of, you know, like in football, people, it's like quarterback and left tackle or whatever.
Right.
If you think about that in basketball, which is not as rigidly positional, but to some degree, like most valuable position type, scoring guard is the least.
Right.
And he is a single position scoring guard, and he is not the kind of scoring guard whose ball skills are such that you can build your offense around him. Like maybe Devin Booker at his best is that, right? Dwayne Wade was that.
Right.
He's not that. He's more of a, like, you know, he's not as good as Ray Allen, but more of a Ray Allen type, right? Ray Allen wasn't going to be your number one guy on a title team, even though he's a Hall of Famer, right? He had to play off of other guys who had more diverse skills, like a Kevin Garnett and a Paul Pierce or whatever. That's sort of Bane. And that works in the context of having Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson, because they have the more variable skills.
Right.
But when you're trying to trade a guy who's making $36 million, I think, next season, and goes up into the 40s, and he is a really good scoring guard, and that is all he is. He is just a scoring guard. There's a limit to the value in that.
What did you make about what he did? He said literally nothing about Isolo. He said, I haven't thought about it. So, and then Isolo obviously was talked about it. What do you believe he will be back, and do you believe he should be back?
I wonder to some degree how tied that's going to be. And let me be clear, I am spitballing here, which many people, when they start yapping, are spitballing. And you got to guess, are they spitballing? I'm spitballing, I'm telling
right,
you.
Right.
I wonder how tied that is to the Morant situation. Because I thought it was notable, every player who was asked about Isolo was complimentary of Isolo. And I think in a very, not in a just going through the motions way.
Right.
Bane was, Jaren was, Edie really was, Pippen really was. I think those two things are notable. Kennard, who's not coming back, was. But Ja, I think, had the strongest stuff on Isolo that was like that went off of what he had to say into the voluntary, right? Like,
use the word exciting.
He never said that about Taylor Jenkins when he was complimenting him, right? So I think Ja likes Isolo. I think Ja likes the way that Isolo approaches the game, which I think caters to Ja. And I think I suspect that if Ja is back, which I think Ja will be back, that Isolo will be the coach. And so, yes, I think Isolo is going to be the coach. But if something happens with Ja and the team like goes in some radically different direction, I don't know about that.
What'd you think of Isolo's, some of his in-game coaching was a little iffy?
It was a mixed bag. I think I sort of cited early on, I think he handled foul stuff better than Taylor Jenkins, or better than most coaches do, and that's an in-game thing. I think clearly he and his staff, even though he pushed back on a question about this after game three, I guess, or maybe game four, did not handle coaches' challenges very well.
Right.
I thought, you know, they lost two close games at home, and one of those, like they lost a play-in game where they had a five-second violation on the inbounds. So was that Santi Aldama's fault? Was that player's fault? Was that a poor play construction?
Right.
Like, whatever, you're the coach. You have a last-second shot situation and ends up with John Conchar taking the shot when Scottie Pippen's on the bench. There's questionable stuff there. But I do think, and Luke Kennard actually had a quote I thought was interesting about this. I think his approach to game from a larger strategic standpoint, not like big picture my team, but like this game, I thought was pretty good in the sense, and Luke Kennard talked about, like, he's a guy who really thinks about the matchups in a game. I think he had a good game plan for playing the Thunder, even with all the problems the Grizzlies had. I think that game plan evolved in a positive way over the series. I think there was a lot of adjustment, counter adjustment with Jaren, and I think there was good adjustments that happened there. There were then counter adjustments, and then the series ended. So who knows what the next thing would have been? I think the very specific hyper, like, you know, react on the fly to this specific play call, this coach's challenge, some of that was shaky, but I think his like thinking about the game strategically was actually pretty good.
Well, it was interesting. You pointed out they had some things figured out against Oklahoma City, and the Josh said it. Like Josh said,
Josh, right.
And it's interesting. Josh said,
getting beat up by this quote already, but
what's funny is Josh sometimes can sound reflexively defensive in it because he said, I know this is going to go viral, but I figured things out and it could have been. And he was just telling the truth. Doesn't mean they would have definitely been 2-2, but like they had figured some things out, and he had.
I got no problem saying that if John doesn't get injured, they win game three. To me, that is almost crystal clear that they win game three.
Yes.
And I think they probably win game two, although that's a little uncertain. Like, yeah, like it's a nip and tuck game and John's not playing. Maybe John plays.
Who knows?
Who knows? But I think there's a good chance they win that game. And then I think there's a good chance they lose in six. But the idea that it would have been 2-2 going back to Oklahoma City if John doesn't get hurt, to me, that is not remotely a stretch. And I do think, and I wrote this in the series, I think they did figure out what they needed to do to compete with them. Now, they couldn't sustain it without Ja, but they did. And this is why I was getting to that with Isla. Yeah. He figured out the way we have to play against this team. Like, I think he figured that out over the course of the series.
I did think in the answer originally, in his first answer to Drew's question, he brought up, he said, we got unintentionally young. And he said, I don't know who needs to hear this. We got unintentionally young.
That's another like self-conscious about the criticism.
Twice. And then the dogs. Those two things. He wasn't asked about dogs or toughness.
Right,
he wasn't asked about youth. And he answered them anyway. Like that's
and Isla also, this is what I was talking about, like listening to the commonalities. The one commonality between what Isla said and what Kleiman said was like, you know, this city responds to gritty players. And
right.
So I think they're self-conscious about some of the fan apathy. And they're self-conscious about that the team does need to be tougher. And trying to tie those two things together. And that seems clear to me an organizational talking point.
You can read Chris's piece over at the Daily Memphian, and I'm sure he'll be writing about this all week. We will be talking about it all week.